Hello and welcome to the debate right here at Press TV. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. 1 year after taking office as president of Egypt, Mohamed Morsi's government is still in turmoil. His opponents say that he has extremist views and there has been more clashing between pro and anti-government protesters, causing more problems for the country. Those who had expected Morsi to cut ties with Israel say that instead they've seen him cut ties with Syria, and those who expected Morsi's government to open the Rafah crossing to Palestinians instead has seen American troops going to the Sinai. What does the future hold for Egypt? Well, stay with us on this debate as we take a look at the future of Egypt.
Protests continue in Egypt amid rising tension between the opposition and the government of President Mohamed Morsi. The opposition has mounted pressures on Morsi, asking him to step down. Meanwhile, the supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood have reportedly come under attack from unknown assailants in Cairo. Some Brotherhood supporters have died in the attack. The movement on whose ticket Morsi won the presidential candidate last year has condemned the killings, describing the dead as martyrs. Egypt is deeply polarized between supporters of the president and the opposition, which is made up of a wide range of groups. Both sides have held numerous mass rallies over the past few days. An opposition-led campaign called Tamarrud, which is Arabic for rebellion, is calling for new protests against Morsi on the first anniversary of his taking office on June 30th. To ease the tensions, Morsi has called for dialogue with his opponents, which has been flatly rejected by the opposition.
I say many Egyptians elected Dr. Mohamed Morsi as president for the sake of Egypt, and now I urge the president to resign for the sake of Egypt and leave the stage so that we can begin a new phase based on the objectives of the revolution, freedom and social justice.
Morsi supporters have condemned calls for his ouster.
Whoever wants to protest on June 30th can do so, but they have to make decent demands, not his ouster. There are people who voted for Morsi and still support him.
Morsi's foreign policy has helped undermine his position at home. The Egyptian president has recently cut all ties with Syria, while he has chosen to keep in place the notorious Camp David treaty with Israel. He has also reportedly approved the deployment of hundreds of U.S. troops in Sinai to guide the peace treaty with Israel. The ongoing situation has cast a shadow over Egypt, with the tensions showing no signs of subsiding anytime soon. The Egyptian defense minister has warned that the military is ready to intervene to stop the nation from entering a, quote, dark tunnel of internal conflict. Morsi has so far resisted calls to step down, while the opposition insists on his resignation. It remains to be seen which side will have the last word at the end of the day.
But I'd like to welcome my guests, both from Cairo. First, Dr. Abdullah Al-Ashal from the National Council for Human Rights. And joining us later in the program will be Dr. Saeed Sadiq, a political commentator. Thank you for being with us. Starting off with you, Dr. Al-Ashal. Now, it's been more than 2 years since the revolution, and Egypt still seems to be longing for stability. What is the main impediment to Egypt attaining peace and stability right now?
Yes, I think there is a conflict between the old regime and the new nascent regime. So the new regime wanted to expand and to hold the country, but the old regime is still holding. So you cannot combine both of them together. At the same time, we have very weak performance of the new regime, and many critics are addressed against them. And this is why I think this added to the burden of the new regime. At the same time, it is the first time for Egypt to have an elected president. And we need to establish this precedent and not to demolish it by the anger of the street. So how to solve the problem or this puzzle between the constitutional legitimacy and the broken political legitimacy? So in this case, I think that something has to happen and take place, and the demonstrations which are planned to be on the 30th of this month, I think this would be a message to President Morsi to see that the Egyptian people is changing, and something wrong is taking place in his policy. And this is very serious because it's not a matter of conflicting. But at the same time, we have a conspiracy against Egypt. We have some elements who are conspiring against the stability of the country and who are trying to make failure a destiny or ultimate destiny for Egypt. So in this case, we have in fact many elements in the situation, and we can distinguish each of it. While the demonstrations are a right for the Egyptians, and this is established now, but the Pacific demonstrations has to be established as a tradition also in Egypt.
Okay, well, why do you think, Mr. Al-Ishal, in general, it seems, it appears, what a lot of Morsi's critics are saying is that what he originally started off saying is turning out to be very differently. In my intro, I mentioned, for example, the support for the Palestinian cause, but on the one hand, we see that that has not really been the situation that's happening on the ground. Why do we have these different perspectives, almost like a clash of perspectives coming from the same person?
Yes, of course, I'm sure that Egypt, the new Egypt, is trying to support the Palestinians, and they try to make the reconciliation a reality in the Palestinian life. But at the same time, the capacities of new Egypt are not enough for making this hard job. Because, as you know, we have two poles. The first pole is Israel and the United States, and the second pole is Egypt on the other side. And so both Israel and the United States are trying to expand the hole between the Palestinians and also to stop the resistance and to make it skirmishing. So this is why the Egyptians find it very hard for them to bring both together on a certain strategy, since Israel is in fact between both of them. So this is why I think that a Muslim Brotherhood, we're supporting the Palestinians, but the Egyptians in general are also supporting the Palestinians. So one remaining element is that whether Israel is a part of the calculation of the new regime or not.
Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Let me get in Dr. Sadek, who's joined us, and I'd like to get his opinion on this question. Dr. Sadek, we were talking about what appears, on the one hand, what Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood, for example, says that they support the Palestinian cause. But we see, for example, now, after a couple of years after the revolution, that still Cairo has regular relations with Tel Aviv, but now have, for example, broken ties with Damascus. Why do you think there's this difference, what appears of what they have said and what actually is happening? Okay.
Okay. Is that for me? Sorry, it took a long time to get... why it is different? The Muslim Brotherhood, as you know very well, is a right-wing organization. It has very important links with the United States since long ago, since 1948. So it is unlikely that the United States would support a regime in Cairo that would be warring on Israel, would be supporting the resistance in Gaza against Israel. On the contrary, it is using the Muslim Brotherhood in Cairo to promote a reconciliation, a settlement, a way to solve the crisis without going through the military conflict. You have to also remember that the Arab Spring countries are all now in trouble internally. All the countries surrounding Israel are suffering from many internal problems. Syria, for example, Egypt, and you can also add into that Lebanon, that can no longer fight Israel. Jordan also is out of the picture. So the military option is not there. So what is realistic for the government in Cairo is to have good relationship with the United States to maintain the peace treaty with Israel. I don't think even among the liberals anybody is talking about breaking relationship with Israel. The whole entire Arab Spring countries are so busy with their own internal problems for a long time. We still have trouble in getting gas in our cars. We have power problems, water problems with Ethiopia. So I don't see that those countries, even if the Muslim Brotherhood is not ruling Egypt, I don't see that there will be any change in the foreign policy of these countries. What they did with Syria is again to try to please the Americans. Maybe the Americans would think that the Cairo government is doing a good job and we should help them facing the internal situation, which is mounting. Now we are going to have a second wave of revolution in Egypt on the 30th of June. And so the regime in Egypt has more things internally troubling them. And so they, by jumping into the foreign policy and doing things that seem even pointless.
Well, Dr. Sadek, let me just jump in here. When you're talking about the situation, you're saying, let me just jump in here.
The diplomatic relationship
let me jump in here, sir, because when you're talking about a situation, you say to do things that may be pointless. How beneficial is this situation right now to Israel itself? And on the other hand, when you're talking about foreign policies that may be pointless, what about, for example, something like the Rafah crossing that many had expectations that up to now that it would definitely be a freer flow of goods and people allowed, contrary to what is really happening on the ground? Dr. Sadek?
I couldn't hear you well, but yes, okay. Can you repeat again, because there was a technical problem in listening to your question.
Is the situation beneficial to Israel or not?
It is very beneficial. It is very, for the first time in the history of the state of Israel, all autocratic rulers that used to control the security situation and you can deal with them directly are gone. But now they also have a fluid situation, very chaotic situation that is not controllable. But I don't see that the Muslim Brotherhood is going to offer a radical policy like Hezbollah or Iran. They might be following a foreign policy like the Gulf states, like Saudi Arabia, maybe some rhetoric against Israel, but in practice they will do nothing against Israel.
Okay.
And so you will have this kind of foreign policy. In addition, how can you imagine that Egypt, that is taking aid from the U.S., and military aid from the U.S. and also Europe, is going to use these weapons to attack Israel?
All right, well, let me just get in some of our comments from our Facebook page. Let's take a look at what our viewers had to say.
The Egyptian opposition should give Morsi enough time to make things better. They must not forget the Fellul and the Israeli agents who want to make Egypt weak and busy with its own injuries. Give him the chance and then judge him. Morsi is the choice of the people, and you can expect him to turn the country into a paradise in 1 year. Do not forget those foreign players like Saudi Arabia and the UAE who want the Egyptian revolution to fail and disappoint the people across the Middle East. What are Morsi's achievements? 1. Keeping ties with Israel while cutting all ties with Syria. 2. Inviting the American troops to deploy in Sinai to protect Israel in case of chaos in Egypt. 3. Dividing the Egyptians and paralyzing the economy. 4. Engrossing themselves in power and forgetting about national unity issues.
Well, what about that, Dr. Al-Ashal, what some of our viewers are saying? The last comment in particular, basically, asking about Morsi's achievements, that you have a government that has continued ties with Israel, cut ties with Syria, deployed American troops in the Sinai, dividing the Egyptians and paralyzing the economy. Your take, sir, on what our viewer has said.
Yes, I think that this decision was criticized widely in the Egyptian streets, because simply it doesn't serve any Egyptian interest. And at the same time, it is making enmity with other allies or other alliances. And I think this untimely as well, because it was very surprising to everybody here. And at the same time, it doesn't have any explanation at all. And this is one of the evidences that foreign policy is conducted without any professionalism. Egypt and Syria had been all the time allies against Israel. And now the Syrian army is induced in some other problems. And this is why I think the only victorious party is Israel from the debacle in Syria. And this is why Egypt had a chance to play a positive role while it was calling for the Egyptian initiative to combine all the four parties concerned. I think Egypt now is displacing itself out of the scene, and it is in fact ostracizing itself in the region, and this is very bad for any foreign policy. This is why I think that the foreign policy had to have a vision first, and it has also to be conducted by experts, not by amateurs.
Well, also turning to Dr. Sadek, in general, when you look at the situation in Egypt, you're talking about a revolutionary country after being obviously in an authoritarian regime for decades and decades. Shouldn't a revolutionary country, if they're trying to break with the past and trying to go in a certain direction, according to what the Egyptians were saying themselves, wouldn't it be the time to try to make that change, be in the beginning, trying to change course, for example, strengthening their relations with the Palestinians and not to trying to affect the resistance?
One is that the first priority is to put the house in order. How can we help the outsider when we cannot help ourselves inside? Secondly, the image of the Palestinians in Egypt is divided. You have some people who believe we should support them, but you have also a growing number of people who suspect the Palestinians, the role of Hamas in the revolution, and supporting the regime. And that's why you have a difficult decision when it comes to foreign policy. Also, how come if we want money from the IMF, from the EU, from the United States, from the Gulf states, that we will make any revolutionary stand in foreign policy?
Would you say that this revolutionary government, if it's called that, is totally dependent on foreign policy, foreign money? And if it is dependent on foreign money, are foreigners actually pulling the strings of Cairo's policies?
Of course, as I mentioned, at this moment, they depend on foreign military and economic assistance. And you have one of the largest source of foreign exchange in Egypt comes from Egyptians who work and live in Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states. We don't see that there is any plan in Egypt that they want to fight or support the Palestinian with weapons, or they play the role of Hezbollah. I don't see this is happening. I don't see that this is going to happen even in the near future. The country, like any Arab Spring countries, is only busy with their own internal problems. What they can offer the Palestinians is mediation, diplomatic assistance, the old role that the Mubarak regime did.
Okay. Dr. Al-Ashal, your perspective, isn't it a matter of as far as direction? Because if the situation, as the doctor has said, that basically dependent on the IMF and the Saudis and the Qataris, so basically then what has really changed in these couple of years? Because before, Egypt was still dependent on the IMF, was basically getting their orders from Washington. So what has changed in these 2 years since the revolution?
In fact, I myself expected that the new Egypt is going to reorder its own situation inside and outside, and to disengage from the old alliances which had been directing Egypt to the rift. But unfortunately, nothing had happened, and we are still in the same orbit. So this is why nothing could change in Egypt without changing the joints of the situation inside and outside. We thought that Egypt is going to move toward Iran and Turkey and to change the whole map of the region and the alliances and to get the Arab world behind it. But unfortunately, I don't think that the regime was able to do that. It doesn't have a vision. Simply, the regime was replacing Mubarak in the same circles with one exception, that the regime itself is not collaborating with Israel against the Palestinians, but it is trying to help the Palestinians without injuring Israel. This equation, in fact, reflects the poor capacities of the new regime in foreign policy and also the modest collaboration that the revolutionaries wanted Egypt to do with the Arab world and to change the map itself. So I think that for some time and under the same conditions, I don't think that Egypt is going to disengage from the same circles that Mubarak was flying over. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult for any regime to come without having a vision to do any change at all, inside and outside.
Dr. Sadek, how close do you think that Egypt is now to the goals of the revolutionaries themselves?
According to many public opinion surveys, only 70% believe that the current regime is realizing the objectives of the revolution. That's why there is big disappointment from the early expectations and aspirations. And that's why we are going to have a second wave of revolution on the 30th of June in Egypt. And that is also adding to the idea that why foreign policy cannot change, because you have so many trouble inside the country. You have many challenges that have not been met. The house is not in order. The legitimacy of the regime is wounded. The popularity of the regime is wounded. The president of Egypt is not Che Guevara. He is not Hezbollah Hassan Nasrallah. He is not Ahmadinejad. He is a regime. It is a regime. It is a president who are facing very difficult challenges, and I cannot blame them. We have to understand that any president after a revolution is going to face very difficult situations. Remember the first Iranian president of after 1979, Abul Hassan Bani Sadr, could not complete 1 year and a half. He was followed by a president, Raghawi, who could not complete 1 month, and he was assassinated. So any president that who would come after a revolution will face very difficult situation, and I don't see that President Morsi is going to be an exception. He is facing very difficult internal situation.
Okay, well, unfortunately, we are out of time. Otherwise, I would have liked to have gotten to a couple more things, but I appreciate both of you being with us out of Cairo. Dr. Saeed Sadek, political commentator, and Dr. Abdullah Al-Ashal, head of Egyptian National Council for Human Rights. And as always, thank you, viewers, for being with us on another debate. And make sure you join us same time, same place tomorrow. I'm Marzieh Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thank you so much for being with us, and goodbye.